The White Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of The Heretics Hour. It is Monday, June 10th, 2013. I have a guest tonight. He is Andrew Anglin of TotalFascism.com. He'll be calling in a couple of minutes, so I'm just going to take this time to tell you that phone calls will be taken in the second hour. After we come back from the break, if you want to talk to Andre or ask him any questions or comment on anything that we've discussed, the number is 1-830-443-4911. And Andre was on the Heretics Hour two times previously, on February 4th and February 11th this year. If you want to go back and listen to those after hearing tonight's show, they're available in the White Network archives. Some housekeeping details I'm going to bring up here. Saturday's program, this past Saturday, which I talked about Ellie Riesel being or not being in Buchenwald, could have been done a lot better. I'm often somewhat disappointed in my I can't even think of the word in the way I do the way the program ends up sounding, I had some technical difficulties. Plus, you know, I tend to look for information that I just think I have to find when I really should just go on, you know, and just say it and not have to be looking at it. What happens when you're looking at notes? You tend to think that you have to, you know, you have to be seeing it in front of you before you can say it or something. So it just gets, you know, a lot of, I spend too much time not with the fooling around. So I'm always trying to do better about that, but it seems to keep happening, so I guess it's a characteristic of mine. But I'm getting the major points down about this very important subject, and I should have it up on maybe even tomorrow on Ellie Riesel Cons the World, because you know, it's it has to be put in writing, and in writing I can get everything right and check over everything. It's not always easy to do that when I'm in the midst of talking, and sometimes when I hear the program afterwards, I hear something, a wrong word or some wrong thing that I say, which I don't even hear myself saying. I don't even recognize that it came out that way. So most people understand that on radio, but still, I'm kind of a stickler for accuracy, so I don't like that. But when the article comes out, I also want to tell the listeners that it's not going to be titled Ellie in Buchenwald comparing it to Alice in Wonderland. I will do that a little bit later, but right now, because of Saturday's program, here's Andrew's call. I had to, I can't do two things at once, so I'm just going to answer the call. All right, here it is. Let me go. Hope he keeps ringing. That should do it. Where is it? List of callers. There is no call. Oh. Well, he needs to call in again. I hope he calls again. Something went wrong with that. I don't know why. It says chat. I don't know. I put it in the right place, as far as I know. But, here's a message from him. Well, he's having a little trouble with his grandmother. She had a fall just 10-15 minutes ago. He said he might have to check on her. Now he says she seems to be worse, and he might have to call his mother, who's a nurse, to come over. But he did call, and now something went wrong with that call. And I don't quite understand why. But anyway, I expect him to call when he can. So let's see here. I'll go back to my little notes. There it is. Okay, here it comes. Let's hope this works. There he is. There he is.
Hey, Carolyn.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Andre, what happened anyway? I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I don't know. I called in, and at first it just kept ringing, and I thought maybe you couldn't answer because the music wasn't over.
No, it was over. Yeah, it was fine. But I don't know. I'm looking here. What is going on? All right, now I'm back again.
Okay.
I'm trying to get on the right page. Somehow this isn't the right page for me to be on, but I guess it at the moment it doesn't matter, so I won't mess with it. So, all right. Well, how are you tonight?
I'm doing okay.
All right. I told the listeners that you're having a little problem with your grandmother, and you need to look after her. So I hope she's okay now.
Yeah, I live here on my family's farm, and I'm the only one living in the house that my grandma stays in right now. So she fell down. I think she's okay now, but I'm just probably going to have to check on her during the show a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, sure you do. You're a good grandson. Well, I was going to, I asked you to come on and help me discuss. So we had kind of talked a little bit about it between ourselves previously, but it's something that I would like to delve into more, and that is what kind of white people's political organizing is most effective. And I have long felt that across the board, white nationalism or white Europeanism is not really workable. And I do get criticism when I say things like that. And I just want to say that I don't see myself as a definer of white activism at all. And I'm just saying what makes sense to me based on my observation. And that is that nationalist organizing for a person, people according to their nation, is what I think causes people to have more motivation and more enthusiasm and more passion about it. And when we get to, when we cross over to, well, let's get all whites organized together, a whole lot is lost, and it doesn't ever seem to work too well. So, but, you know, we can go into all of this in detail tonight. So, I would just say that we've also mentioned that there seem to be some differences between American thinking and European thinking, and perhaps we don't always understand the other for that reason, which is not, I don't know how what there is to say about that, but we're prepared to go into these questions tonight, right?
Yep.
Would you like to make some opening remarks about what I just said?
Well, I think there can be a kind of, you know, worldwide white identity and also have nationalism. I think the type of European Union system that Hitler supported, something based on the concept of the Reich, the Holy Roman Empire, I think this makes the most sense, where you have autonomy, but you have pretty close relations between the various autonomous nations. When they talk about like an imperium, there's that guy in Malta who talks about that. And I mean, I like the concept is very romantic, but like you said, I mean, I think people are willing to work harder when it's for their more specific type of culture and their language and their history. With that, Dominique, you probably say his last, Venner, is that how you say it?
I don't know. I guess he's French, but I'd just say Venner, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say these French names. I've been reading some of his stuff, and Greg Johnson had translated it, a lot of it. I guess he was publishing his works for a while before he committed suicide there in the Notre Dame Cathedral in protest of the replacement of the European people. And he viewed himself both as a French and a white European nationalist. So I think that's the way most Europeans view themselves, as a combination of both, because we do have so much of a shared heritage and history besides our, America is a little bit different, you know, myself pretty mixed up between different ethnicities from Europe, but I think Europeans do view themselves in as both, as a member of their individual nation and as a member of the larger European Christian heritage.
Right. Well, I agree with that. I agree with you on all of that. I would just make the comparison with the European Union, and people say, "Well, you know, I think it's actually similar to what the European Union was going to do. They were going to unite all Europeans. Now we know that they had an agenda behind this, but a lot of people didn't realize it or didn't think so, and it seemed like an innocent enough idea. And they always assured all the individual nations and politicians and so on that it was no sovereignty of any nation was going to be abused, and they were all going to keep everything, you know, that all their identity, and nothing was going to be taken away from them. It was just going to be to try to unite in order to make Europe a stronger force in the world for both economically and politically. But we see how it happens, that slowly, little by little, even though they keep saying differently, that they take away and they take away your individual national freedoms. And now, you know, it's very clear to everyone, and so there's a growing opposition to it. But this, I think, I even see this in those who push a European, I can't think of his name either, the guy from Malta with the Imperium. I listened to him a few years ago when he was making a big splash with it, kind of, and I don't think it's taken off at all. But that he ended up saying, well, we don't want these Germans taking charge. You know, we don't want the German language to be the official language or something like that. That ugly language. I don't know, in Malta, I guess they speak some kind of Italian. But, you know, he was saying a lot of things, and he was talking about this elite who was going to run it, you know, and of course he was among them, and he already had in mind who the other elites were going to be. And the whole thing was like, I just got turned off immediately by this person. But this is often the way they think, that there's a few white people, elite, who consider themselves elites, who are going to run this, and pretty soon they're telling the rest, you know, what they can do and what they can't do. And this is where it always falls apart then. You know, it just doesn't work that way. It won't work that way is what I'm saying. You can't get all white people to give up their individual national identities and languages and so on into this greater white thing.
I don't know if he was, we can't remember his name, but I don't know if he was pushing that idea so much, because he talked about, you know, that they should have civil autonomy and these types of things. I mean, the EU now is writing regulations about, you know, how you should do your trash pickup and what kind of pipes to use. I mean, they're really you know, they want to standardize the whole thing, and obviously the economics of it aren't working at all, especially trying to integrate all these Slavic people, and now they're talking about they're going to allow Turkey in. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. a complete failure. But, I mean, so much of that is because it's run by Jews. You know, I think, again, some of these things would just be kind of obvious and everybody would be able to agree on what was or wasn't reasonable if we weren't dealing with these Jews.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I'm saying is...
In the middle of everything.
Yeah, well, that's true. But that might be... Well, that might be kind of another issue because I think that it was really Europeans who wanted, who've been pushing this European Union idea, and they always start out by telling you that you're going to retain all your autonomy, and then slowly they need to, well, we need to agree to this, and you need to agree to that, and so on, and you lose it, and I think that happens. No matter who's in charge of it, you know, it's even though they maybe intend for it not to happen in the beginning, but it does because people, they want a unified, front and they want unified activity. And to unify, you know, you just see how people are different and, need to be able to feel who they are. I'm just, before I go any further, I want to comment that the picture I used in my mailer was, you know, I didn't put that picture of all those blonde, that group of blonde, smiling, happy people, because I think that that's the ultimate, you know, of Europeans. But I did because I happened to see it, and what it expresses to me is that is people who are similar and who look similar and how comfortable they are with one another and how nice they look together. And it would be the same thing if it was a picture full of, you know, a picture of, say, Greek people or Italians who some of them are blonde, but who were all had dark hair and dark eyes. It's still they look nice together. They look comfortable together. And I'm not saying that light haired people and dark haired people don't belong together, because they certainly are together in my own family, but I'm just saying that, you know, this is my idea of the good society and the good world where people can be like people who look like themselves and are the same as themselves, you know, and so that picture just appealed to me on that basis.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've been around Europeans and Canadians and Australians, and I don't see that there's really that big of differences as far as, you know, on a one-to-one level. I think that most of those people are better educated than Americans, but I don't know, with the global communications and the global transportation, it's kind of inevitable that there will be a certain cultural meshing, and that you know, the differences between the the old European cultures will melt away to some degree. I think I don't really think that's avoidable.
Well, it might. It might be so, but you know, right now, the most successful parties and the ones that everyone is are looking at and admiring are the Jobbik in Hungary and the Golden Dawn in Greece, and they are definitely nationalist parties who are trying to make their countries for their own people. You know, Greece for the Greeks and Hungary for the Hungarians, and they of course. The big issue is immigration, and that's something that the European Union has brought about more and more and more, as so that to further, you know, unify the Europe, they just have to allow people to travel around and go to any country they want to. So it's not even just Africans or Turks who are not, or Pakistanis or Indians or whatever who are coming in. But it's even there are even problems with Europeans going into other countries at will, without any any need to show anything, deciding I'll go live here, I'll go live there, which is creating some displacements and some problems, I think. For one thing, the Roma are considered Europeans, and so they are allowed to go wherever they want. You know, there's a lot.
They're not actually European.
But yeah, but if they come from a European, if they're citizens of they're considered a European.
They're Semitic, though.
We know they're, I think they're Indian, but they're kind of a mixture, you know, this is the kind of thing that happens when you no longer have control over what can happen in your country amongst your own national people. And that's what's happened here. These people have lost all that control. And I'm just saying that when you want to combine people into a larger whole, that is invariably going to happen, I think.
Well, yeah, and it seems that the Jews are kind of focused on using this European Union to destroy the older cultural, the intricacies of people's national culture. They kind of encourage people. I forget what there's incentives to move to different countries within the EU from where you're born. I don't know if some of those might have to do with employers getting more, you know how they do all these things with taxes, and if they're employing somebody from Eastern Europe and like they do here with employers getting more money to hire foreigners, diversity programs and all of this. So it seems that they're trying to forcibly integrate the countries of Europe. I can definitely see that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, well the Jews have gotten in this, and they've got their own European Parliament now, and everything is not
too
funny.
Jews running that Brussels.
Oh yeah. Yeah, right. Well, they get in because they're not. You can't say that they're Jews. They're just, you know, from this country or that country. They're considered nationals from the various countries, and you can't call them a Jew. You certainly can't. I know you can't in Germany. It's absolutely. I don't think there's a law against it, but it's absolutely forbidden for a German to call another German a Jew, because they're not. They're a German, you know. And the same even with all these. This thing I posted about the interview with one of those NSU victims, mothers, I mean the two German guys who are now dead, where they talk about now these the ones who were killed by whoever killed them. I don't know that it was these guys. They say they had Turkish roots, and one had Greek roots. You know, that's how they have to talk about them. They have these roots, but they're not, you know, they're just Germans with these roots. They don't even say ancestry.
Well, it's insane the way these people will identify as members of the countries that they live in. I said before, you know, if I had a wife and was married and living in China and we had a kid, we wouldn't say that the kid was Chinese, but all these people they identify these Muslims as British. They don't even have to have been born there. They just, they identify them in the news as British people when they're clearly, mm-hmm. you know, Arabs.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not against, I certainly, definitely not against the idea of Europeanism and European white nationalism or anything like that. But I think as far as organizing, do you know of any successful organization along those lines? When did that kind of thing? There's people trying to do it I'll mention two names here. There's this fellow Kai Mouros, who a lot of people think so highly of him, and he's considered a European white nationalist. He's Finnish. He's Finnish, and he's an academic, and he does a lot of real tough talking. But I don't see that I don't know what's actually been done or accomplished by him. And for some reason, he's just not somebody that appeals to me. He never has. I haven't spent a lot, because when I do listen to him or read him, I'm not interested. I'm bored or something, or I'm turned off, so I don't. But then there's Tom Sunik, who is another academic who always pushes European, a European front for all Europeans, and he puts down nationalism as saying we need to get rid of these petty nationalisms, or we don't want these petty nationalisms, that he calls it that, which also bothers me. And I don't see that they accomplish, that they get anywhere with it, because you can go around and you can talk to nationalists from this country and that country and the other country, and which is about what they do. And then they're still, they haven't formed anything that goes beyond that that has had any success. What do you say?
Yeah, I like the writings of both those guys. I don't know. I've never been to Europe, and obviously I'm not European, so I can't exactly comment on what they should or shouldn't be doing, but it does seem, like you said, that the successful movements right now are nationalistic rather than white nationalistic. Well, I think they're both, but
yeah, well, they all support, white nationalism, but
yeah, they all just felt
functioning.
Across.
They're functioning as working to save their own countries, to save their own countries from the genocide brought about by this immigration. Really, immigration is unfettered immigration is the biggest problem that we face.
Yeah, it's the death blow.
Yeah.
I mean, there had to be all these other things, the collapse of the social order and, the economic situation, all these things had to happen in order to get this immigration as this death blow. I mean, they've been engineering society since the war, to set it up to make this possible.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you're planning a trip to Europe, and can you tell us by any chance what you hope to see and do there, or what you hope to learn there, and what you're going to be looking at in particular?
Well,
I know you didn't want to talk
about
it too much.
Yeah, I'm not. It's kind of just something I'm doing. It's not really something I'm planning out. I'm just going to basically just get on a plane. But yeah, I wanted, like we said, the Golden Dawn and, however you say, Hobbit, are the two most successful right now, so that's what I'd like to see. I think the Golden Dawn is definitely a lot more exciting, sexier. So I'm very interested in this, and I think the situation in America will end up being something very, very similar to what's happening in Greece right now, because I think we're headed for that type of economic situation when it's going to be very clear that we need to take care of ourselves rather than all these savage third world invaders. So they have a very good system set up dealing with it. When you see the interviews with these guys, it's very clear that they have a plan. Even the young guys, they feel very confident and very clear-minded about what they're doing. And it seems like, from what I've seen, and there's so little information available about it, really, but that they're doing exactly what they should be doing, and it's going to work. I mean, whether or not they're going to get invaded by NATO if they get close to taking over the government, I don't know. But I mean, they now have so many men that if they try and ban the party, there's going to be a civil war.
Well,
so, I want to go to Greece, and I'll probably go to Hungary. The way it works is you're only allowed to stay 90 days. I can probably figure out another visa, but it's just something I kind of got to figure out when I get there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah, you're just kind of going in and see how it works out. Well, and naturally, you'd want to go and see what's happening in Greece. And now, what to me is so impressive about Golden Dawn is the way that they never back down. And they're pretty aggressive, but it isn't just so much that they take a fairly aggressive stand. I don't want to push aggressiveness in the sense that they're going out, you know, and they really do go out there and say what they think and deal with the people, and we know all their good programs with the people of Greece and so on. But recently, it wasn't too long ago. I saw a big picture of the head of the party, that older man. I don't have his name written down either. But he was walking down this corridor, and it had something to do with what's going on now. You know, with the desire of the Jews to get the government to ban their party or to make this and that, make things illegal and so on. And so he was walking down down this corridor with a very determined look on his face, and following him in this wide corridor, looked like an official government building or something, was at least four men, two on each side, and kind of spaced out pretty far from one another. And they were all young, handsome, big, tall, strong, well-dressed, you know, just looking serious, you know, serious looks on their faces. And they probably were in some way bodyguards for him, plus being, you know, part of his entourage and so on. And it just looked so good. It looked so good. You know, we're not used to seeing things like this anymore much. And, you know, what these people really understand what they're doing. And they're doing it in a country where I think they had a little bit of a advantage because a lot of the police and authorities and so on are sympathetic to them. And it's a little bit different in Greece than in some others. And so they've been able to be successful. But they've pushed at it. It's not like they just started yesterday. I mean, it's been going on for 20 years. Something like that, I understand, and they didn't have success. Yeah, and they didn't have success in the beginning, but now they do. So this is, but they have this dedicated group of people in there. I don't know how many there are. There has to be quite a lot, but still, they're still a very much a minority in their own country, which isn't only how many people in Greece, 8 or 9 million or something like that, or am I wrong about that? But it's not
It's not very many. I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think it's around 10. Yeah.
But you know, I think that the model that they're setting up there is just fantastic.
Well, yeah. If it happens once, it's going to happen again. I mean, that's the whole idea, is to set up the model. That's why they the real reason for the war. The way they were able to get so many of these Gentile capitalists behind it is because Hitler had created the model that was going to work, and it was going to abolish this finance capitalism. So once people of the world can see something working, then it'll take off all over, I think.
Well, you know, there is talk. I'll get into that. Somehow this is a rising tide, and so that's why it has to be shut down before it grows any bigger, and so on. But sometimes that's just a lot of talk because they want the opposition wants to exaggerate the strength of these parties in order to make governments and make the people think there's something to fear. And something needs to be done about it. You know, they need to clamp down and outlaw them and so on. But this Yamik party, I really like too. They probably because in Hungary they don't have the kind of same kind of a country that Greece is, and a population that's willing to support them quite as well, because everybody's afraid, you know. And but there's a lot of support for them, and they've done very well too. They haven't really backed down, but now they're being pushed harder, and the Jews are more active, I think, in Hungary than they are in Greece. Probably more of
them. I think the Jews are leaving Greece. I think they're afraid.
Wouldn't that be great if they'd leave? Wouldn't that be great? Then you could see a country with no Jews in it, you know, just about, and see how that worked out.
That because, I mean, the Golden Dawn is following Mein Kampf, I mean, to the letter. This whole thing that they're doing there, it's just pulled directly from Mein Kampf, and I think Jews can see that, and they're kind of getting out of Dodge.
Well, I don't know. That would be nice.
In Hungary, they're going out on the street and protesting, and you haven't seen that, or at least I haven't. It's hard to get news updates about what's going on in Greece, but I have not seen anything with, like, they're doing in Hungary. They're definitely going out on the street, and they're putting those yellow stars on, you know, saying that there's going to be another Holocaust and all of this, and they're not getting beat up. I think if they tried that in Greece, they'd probably get beat up.
Who's putting on the yellow stars and going out?
The Jewish protesters in Hungary. I saw some pictures of them.
Oh, okay.
They were protesting recently. One of the PMs in Hungary said that, you know, the Holocaust didn't happen. I think it was up for funding for a museum, a Holocaust museum, and one of the party members of, how do you say, Jobbik? Habik?
I think it's Jobbik, Andre.
Yeah.
The J is like a Y. It might be a better way to pronounce it, but that's close enough. It's not Jobbik, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. On the BBC, they seem to say like an H sound. But,
I don't.
Yeah, they were protesting some statements made by one of the PMs regarding the Holocaust, and they went out there and they were wearing their yellow stars, saying this is Hitler all over again and all that stuff, which is, I don't know. I keep thinking people are just about to the point where they're going to be fed up with this, and the Jews don't really seem to be thinking that way. Like, at some point, people are going to have to get sick of these people whining.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they probably are, but they're still afraid. Now, the government in Hungary is a kind of a right wing type sort of government, but they're not so far. You know, they don't go all the way to what the Jobbik is doing. So, but the Jobbik is kind of respected and by the actual government that's been put together there, and they don't want to, you know, ban them or anything like that, and that's what's being called for by the Jews and the globalists. But they have a pretty good position there, but the government feels like it has to be very careful, and it has to be respectful when Israel comes and complains, or when their, you know, representatives come and they say, okay, we'll look this over, we'll take care of this, and so on. And you know, that keeps, you know, that kind of thing puts a damper on it, you know, and it's too bad that they're part of the European Union. That's the thing. They have to follow the rules, at least appear to be. They have to take it seriously, act like they are. They have to be respectful of all these laws and rules and all these people that come around telling them what they need to do. And they don't want to be kicked out because go on their own, because economically it's a disaster for a nation, and then the people are going to really turn against them. So everybody's, you know, looking out for their pocketbooks. This is the same in Austria, which has a good what you call, anti-immigrant party. It's been around for a long time. It's kind of changed names and people, but and the people in Austria are really, really sympathetic, and they're very nationalist in their thinking. They don't like the rules of the European Union, but it's all financial and economic, you know. Austria has big banks, and they are definitely, you know, involved in all that international banking. And when they did vote this nationalist leader into something pretty major, the European Union came down, and really, this was a few years ago. I don't have the details in front of me, and I just can't even give details when I don't, because I either don't remember the names exactly, or I don't want to make a mistake. But it was, you know, sometime in the 90s, that late 90s, that they were really punished by the European Union. And then they went and voted the right way again. I mean, this is what these big over umbrella things can do. And I think this is why I'm kind of, I never trust them, because unless they're just really don't have any power, they're just symbolic, like, say, a European white nationalist umbrella group would be just kind of symbolic, where everybody would say, well, you know, they join and become a part of it, but they're not being told what to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
your phone's cutting out.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can.
Yeah, the Golden Dawn is advocating basically a complete pullout of the European Union. So, I mean, clearly it's not working the way it's set up, but, I mean, that might have quite a bit to do with just the fact that it's been set up by Jews, and the basic purpose of it, I think, is to just completely destroy Europe, abolish Europe, really, by replacing the population with people from Africa.
Well, it is. You're right. You know, and people should see that, and if people are starting to see it, and they don't like it, but they're so enslaved to the economic situation and the power that these people have gotten, the power that has been accumulated there in Belgium, with the European Union headquarters and so on. You know, they don't, if you go on your own, you're going to be punished so badly. I don't know. There's this, but they have to, okay, so I think it depends on these national movements, in Europe, as far as Europe goes. It depends on these national movements to keep working, to keep getting stronger. I think they're more important. And there is, I found on Google, by Googling, there is something called the Alliance of European National Movements, AENM, and it was formed in Budapest by a number of nationalist and far-right parties from countries in Europe. And the founding members are Jobbik in Hungary, which is called the Movement for a Better Hungary, and National Front in France, which is doesn't like to talk about the Jew too much. Tricolor
no.
Flame in Italy. Probably none of these want to talk about the Jew. The Sweden's National Democrats and Belgium's
in Italy.
National
it's
Front. Yeah.
The Forza Nuova, or is that what it is? I think it's called the New Force in English.
They call this the Tricolor Flame. You know, I think some of these parties are the more moderate type ones, because Sweden's far right party is not the National Democrats; it's something else. But at the last minute, I couldn't, I didn't find it. But they have a
I believe it's the National Front is what it is in English. I don't know what it's
in Sweden.
What it's called in Swedish?
Yeah, it might be, because I know this one is not. This one is a little more moderate, what they call the National Democrats. And then in Belgium, the National Front is also probably, you know, a little more moderate. And then in Spain, they have the Republican Social Movement, called the Third Position, adheres to the commonplace strategy common to other forms of Strasserism and National Bolshevism, of defending socializing, and at times it's leftist in that sense, and adopting conservative and anti-immigration stances. I think all these people are willing to be anti-immigrant. They're not willing, though, to talk about the Jews, you know, and they're careful about everything. But I think any country is on real solid ground if they come out very strongly anti-immigrant. And so I can see why a lot of these parties do that, and that's about all they do. But and I think that they should be able to get the people to support them. I can't imagine people in a nation not supporting anti-immigrant, legislation, except for the few that are running that whole business. But then again, the reason they can't do it is because of the European Union and all those laws they've managed to pass and force down the throats of a lot of these nationalist governments who tried to resist them, but then they just change the rules somehow, and I don't know, they don't even have to poll their people. They just get the vote in their legislatures to agree to it. And people are just over, you know, just like we've been all through starting in the 60s in the United States. We just don't know how to overcome this stuff that's being pushed down your throat all the time in some way that you are unable to resist. So, I don't know if you're still there. Are you still there, Andre, or did your phone go out or something?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I had it on mute. I was dealing with something here. But I heard what you said.
All right.
I think the thing is, now that we've gotten to this immigration, it's just, it feels like it's gone too fast and that there's going to be just a major backlash everywhere that no one wants to tolerate this immigration. That's what I see is going to happen. So, I think right now it's about setting up a structure, to deal with it and to harness the backlash that's coming, that's already really here. I mean, when I talk to people in public here in Ohio, everyone is sick of these sickening people everywhere. I mean, just the numbers are so incredible. And it's just too much. I mean, they've gone too far. So what they seem to be counting on now is not allowing a structure for any kind of dissent to be funneled into. So, the only thing you've got here is, the Republican Party is going through a Browning, with even the Libertarian, Ron Paul standing up Ron Paul Jr., Rand Paul, saying that, we need more brown people in the Republican Party, so there's no outlet for anyone who's upset with this immigration to have anywhere to go. So I think that's what needs to be done, is to set up the structure for that. I mean, we see in in England, the BNP and the EDL are, controlled opposition set up where they won't say anything about the Jews, which just doesn't make any basic sense. How are these people getting into the country? They can just use code words, liberal and communist, but it doesn't ever go anywhere unless you're talking about the Jews who have caused this all to happen.
What I'd say there is that I know that you want to be positive. Most people do, and doesn't do much good just to sit and point out the problems like I tend to do. But I think that that's why these nationalist parties are the best solution right now. Even in the United States, I don't know what we've got here. We'll have to talk about that in the second hour, what we've got going on in the United States. But, I think that the plan is, and I think it's pretty far along, that they're going to they flood enough of these people in, and then it's not possible to have a backlash or to have an uprising against them, because there's too many of them. And if, as we saw in Sweden, last week or 2 weeks ago, that when these people start rioting, these aliens start rioting, then the police and the officials defend them and support them and do not and don't support go against the indigenous, the true national people, to come out and defend themselves and do something about it and attack these people in return. No, so this is the problem. This is the worry that I have, is that there's too many, as you said, there's so many of these people already, and that was the plan, to get these overwhelming numbers, and then they vote too, you know. So it becomes difficult for us unless we would start right this minute. And even then it's difficult to do anything about it. And I think, therefore, a lot of people feel that the problem is too big. And if they try to speak out and do anything, they're just going to suffer for it. So they're kind of resigned.
Yeah, I think that's the way the, you know, baby boomer generation is. I think that my generation is a little bit just more confused about what's even going on, because it's been happening since I was younger. I mean, I can remember when all these people weren't here. I guess it started when I was finishing up high school, but you know, for younger people there's less of a understanding of what it even means to have all these people flooding in, and what the consequences of that are going to be. I think that older people can see it and understand, but it's not, there's no outlet, you know. I mean, these people are still talking about the Republicans and conservatism and all this stuff. So I mean, we've definitely got a very bad situation here. I think we do need to stay positive, but what that's going to look like isn't clear yet.
No, because, you know, with this immigration bill, this amnesty bill, which, God, all the work that went into fighting that thing and keeping it from being passed, now it's finally being passed under this damn black president that we got stuck with. And now, of course, the white ones were going to do the same thing. So, you know, it's all pretty hopeless. You're going to have all these people made legal, and then they're just, at some point, they're just going to turn the country into their own country. You know, where I live, it is so many mestizos and Mexicans and so on, and they keep pretty well behaved. But at some point, when, you know, you go into places and all you hear is them speaking their language, and they're going to force their language to be an official, acceptable language. And it's just the way this stuff moves along. Now, it's not that far gone in Europe, which is why I think the hope is in Europe. And the hope has to be in these individual countries and their parties that are fighting for their own national autonomy and freedom. And they have to get out of the European Union. In what way can that European Union come apart? That's one thing that needs to happen.
Yeah, well, it has to be through, like you said, through nationalism of the individual countries. I mean, to do that, considering the economics, that the economics have already been integrated, I mean, you would have to separate from the you know, you would have to create national banks and issue your own credit and currency is the only way you could do it. And I mean, with this globalism, you know, so much of the production is now the production of basic needs has been taken outside of individual countries. So it would definitely be complicated, but I think it can still be done.
Yeah, it's definitely an economic thing. They get this financial grip, they get this economic grip, and the people, no matter how much they can see their country turning, you know, into something other than what it always used to be, and they have all these foreigners in there being equal citizens to themselves, they still have enough well-being, and they still have enough, I guess, areas where they don't have to associate with so many of these people, they don't want to lose the economic benefits. That they don't want to face financial ruin, you know, in order to, and have some big revolution, which would almost have to take place.
And, yeah, it's going to have to be a very big revolution, and it takes reaching. I mean, the advantage that Greece has, besides having a different culture than the rest of Europe, they're a little bit less refined, I think. But the biggest advantage that they have is the fact that they're the ones suffering these economic consequences, which have been really severe. Which is you know, when people get to that bottom. But I mean, we're not really seeing much of a nationalist revolution in Spain. I think it's going to happen. I think that's going to, the places that are getting really, really bad are the places where it's going to happen first. I mean, just like what the Jews did to Germany after World War I, I mean, that's what created Adolf Hitler.
Well, I think that what Germany is doing, and even Merkel and her people, is good in that they're saying, you know, we can't be bailing you people out forever, and so, you know, you need these austerity programs, and that's causing a lot of unrest and amongst the people. And if they ended up just leaving the European Union, you see, over this, I would be very happy about that. But at the same time, the European Union does not want to see that, so it's going to do everything in its power to prevent that and to keep them in. So this is kind of a, we've only got a few more seconds before the break.
Yeah, unless they have their own banks, it's not going to make any difference anyway. If they're still a part of the World Bank, IMF, Jewish system, it won't make any difference if they're in the EU or not.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, all right, I've got some more things to bring up in the second half. So, ladies and gentlemen, stay with us, and we'll be back in 5 minutes.
Im Westen und Osten, sie liegen in aller Welt, und ihre Helme verrosten und Kreuz und Hügel zerfällt. Sie liegen verscharrt und versunken im Massengrab und im Meer, aber es leben Halunken und die ziehen noch über sie her. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätter und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätter und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Sie waren nicht ausgezogen um Beute und schnöden Gewinn. Was heute verlacht und verlogen, es hatte für sie einen Sinn. Sie hatten ihr junges Leben nicht weniger lieb als die, heute Höhnen es hinzugeben, sei reine Idiotie. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon stark. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon stark. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Musik. demonstrieren, mehr Freizeit bei höherem Lohn. Sie mussten ins Feld marschieren, der Vater, der Bruder, der Sohn. Sie gingen die Heimat zu schützen und haben allen entsagt. Was kann uns der Einsatz nützen, hat keiner von ihnen gefragt. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit und welche Erbärmlichkeit.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on the Heretics Hour on Monday, June 10th, and my guest is Andrew Englund of TotalFascism.com, and we're trying to make sense out of or add a little bit to a very confusing and difficult topic and a very difficult problem that we have is how to fight this globalism and all these immigrant invasions, and we've been talking about Europe, and if you have some things you want to add, Andre, about Europe, I'm gonna after that turn to see what would be the answer for us here in the United States.
Yeah, Europe. You know, it's hard for me to say. I don't know what the mood of these people is, what it feels like. You know, I've never been to Europe. I've met Europeans internationally, and I've met them here, and they, you know, when I bring these topics up, nobody that you talk to likes these immigrants, but I don't know what the attitude is there and what they're planning on doing about it. It seems like nationalism should be easier in Europe than it is here, but.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it is. You know, it is. They have something they can work with there, much better than we do. So I think, you know, all those parties should be encouraged, even if they're still afraid to name the Jew, if they're talking about, immigration. Although, Tan Stoffel just posted today, I guess, I just saw it today, on his Age of Treason website, an article, a good analysis of this Paul Weston and that party in England, the British party.
Yeah, I read it.
And there, you know, you can always fault these people. And he kind of does say that it's good what he's doing, except that by catering to the Jews, he's really ends up doing the work of the Jews. So, you know, we have to bring that up, but this is where it gets difficult because you're real good about that because you've been saying all along tonight that you know it's the Jews behind it, but sometimes people might sincerely think that that's the only way they can reach people to do something about getting rid of, you know, stopping the immigration and changing the color and, you know, ethnicity of their nation is to do it without offending the Jews because, you know, that's the way they might get some support. Professor McDonald has sometimes talked sort of like that, well, that was acceptable, you know, if that's what they felt they had to do. But so your opinion?
Well, I don't think the Jews are going to stop. So without addressing the Jewish problem, you're just trying to treat symptoms.
Okay, we're not hearing you again.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. What happens?
I don't know. I was sitting in the same place. I've moved now. I don't think there's any way you can fix the problem without dealing with the Jews. It doesn't make any sense. The other thing is it's appealing to people. I mean, the idea of an all inclusive explanation for all of these problems is so simple that it's just these Jews. That's what I think, you know, when you talk about a workable propaganda message, that it's so simple. And if you do include this Holocaust, I mean, the Golden Dawn brings up the Holocaust every chance they get that they think it's a hoax. And because if you can get past that, then really the Jews lose their status as these poor victims, and you have a situation where you can see them for what they are. I mean, they've cloaked themselves in this victimhood that's only been accepted since World War II. I mean, they tried it before that. Constantly they were trying to talk about how they're always the victims, going back a very long time, even to, you know, Rome. But once you get rid of that, you can see these people for what they are, and it's not hard to turn against them. They're so fundamentally unlikable. There's nothing about these people that you can like. But as far as, you know, trying to set up a party where you don't talk about the Jews, I just don't see how that could ever be successful, because it just doesn't make any sense. Why would who would have brought all these people here? I mean, even rich white people, why would they want all these immigrants? It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, well, there's people who sincerely believe that it's the corporations. It's the corporations who want this cheap labor, and they don't want to pay decent wages to people. That's what they believe, like Alex Jones kind of thinking.
Well, that makes sense in terms of the Mexicans. It doesn't make sense with these Muslims and the other people, and it doesn't make sense in the long run with the Mexicans, because that heritage, what was his name, Richwine, he talks about, he did studies on the second generation Mexicans, and they all just have, you know, bastard kids and live on welfare. The hard-working Mexican thing is only for the first generation. Once they're raised in this, you know, American sex culture, Jewish sex culture, the heathenism, they can't deal with it. I mean, they do a worse job, much worse job than the white youth does with dealing with this, dehumanizing, over-sexualized cultures, so they just end up living on welfare. So there's no long-term benefit with the Mexican immigrants, and there's no short-term benefit bringing all these. I don't know. Columbus, Ohio has thousands and thousands of Somalians, but I mean, I guess they're bringing other forms of Africans and Muslims into other states. It doesn't benefit corporations in the long run. It doesn't benefit anyone but the Jews.
Yeah, I think those are all brought in on some kind of refugee basis or something. It's just ridiculous. Why should we be taking in all these people because somehow they're having a hard time in their own country? That's just part of the whole globalist agenda that they try to fool us with.
Yeah, and it doesn't help them either. What they don't become more like us when they get here. I mean, they just bring us down to their level because these people are not genetically capable of existing in a modern system.
Mm-hmm.
I use the analogy. I know it's created by a Jew, and there were a lot of Jew writers, but with Star Trek, they have this thing called the Prime Directive, and they won't contact people on a planet unless the people have already developed warp drive, which is the, you know, the space travel at light speed through space. They will not contact the people because they say they're not ready to understand that, you know, there's this whole empire in space. And that's the way I feel about these non-whites. Besides, I guess, East Asians, that they're not capable of adapting to our civilization, and they would have to develop it on their own. Otherwise, they're never going to be capable of just taking what we have and making it work. I mean, in Africa, the only thing they want to import is guns, because that's what their culture has always been, going back to, you know, when I read David Livingstone, when he was the first guy to go into the center of Africa, and it was just all, they were just all killing each other all the time with spears. So, of course, they're not interested in, you know, agricultural technology and any of this stuff. They just want guns so they can kill each other better.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. And there's some probably some peaceful groups, and they get caught up in that. But too bad, you know. I mean, that's their homeland, and they all need to stay there and work with what's going on there. But we're supposed to save them. That's this. This they started out with this liberal philosophy and help everybody.
Yeah,
It's
not a solution to bring them all here. It doesn't. It obviously doesn't make any basic logical sense. Even if you think it's our job to take care of all these people, I mean, even if that's the argument that it's the white man's job to take care of the whole world, and make sure they have all these modern technologies for whatever reason, I mean, it doesn't make any sense why these people had a functioning system. I've argued this, that it's cruel to these people to give them these technologies. I mean, they had functioning societies in these, you know, Latin American and African and some of the Asian countries. They had societies that worked, and they didn't need all these technologies and all this stuff brought in. I mean, a lot of that had to do with, you know, in Africa, obviously, the Jews wanted all the resources. They're getting all their diamonds. So they set it up as like, oh, well, we're bringing civilization to the savages. But it doesn't benefit these people any. And all they're doing here, I mean, they're feeding off of us, but eventually they're going to suck the host dry, and there's not going to be any more money to feed these people, because they're taking over. I mean, they're bringing down our society to their level. I mean, they're taking over. The universities have these quotients, all the big corporations, that they have to appoint people into high level positions that are non-white and have low IQs. I saw a map. It was actually on Wikipedia. I've been meaning to write an article about this, but it had the IQ by country. And it's exactly inverted to the level of development. I guess it's to say the lower IQ countries have the lowest development. And you know, the average IQ of some of these African countries is 59.
Oh, I know, it's terrible. It's horrible. Hey,
that's like retarded.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's what we classify as mentally handicapped, and that's their average.
Not mentally handicapped, that's imbecile. Andre, somebody's calling with an undisclosed number. I answered it, but I don't see they didn't come on. Are you there on the line, caller? No. I wonder what's going on here. But I have said that I won't take undisclosed numbers. So I think I'll just forget this, since he's not on the line. He didn't come through for some reason. I don't know what's going on here tonight. Okay. It's still showing his ringing, but it might be Russ. And I don't know, who it would be. So, all right. Well, let's go on. I don't know this. This confused. I'm undecided whether I should try to answer it again. No, he hung up. Okay. Okay. Let's. You're right. I mean, this discrepancy in IQ and so on that they don't want to talk about just makes things impossible. And it's just all destroying us. It's all we need to. As you said, we need to just come right out and say, you know, it's to destroy us. I don't know if we need to yell. I talk about the Jews all the time, but I don't know if we need to yell Jew, Jew, Jew as much as we need to point out to ordinary people the destruction of our nations and our whole foundation and everything. And what good is it doing anybody else? You know, how much good are we anyway? Do we exist in order to help people who are far beneath us in capability and so on? That in itself needs to be attacked, but.
Reevaluated.
There you go. How about though the United States? What is the answer for us in the United States? We don't have the kind of national countries and national populations that they have in Europe. So it makes us very different. You know, we're a very different kind of a country. Of course, we've been called a proposition nation and things like that, which opens us up to all of this race mixing. And so what would be the best – what is the best approach here in this country? Okay, the same guy is calling again. You know, I'm going to go ahead and try to answer it, but I can always ignore him if he doesn't –
okay.
Funny number. It just doesn't seem to be coming on. It just doesn't come. It just doesn't come through. I'm not doing
maybe
anything.
He's just calling to listen.
Well, I don't think we work that way. So I don't know. Forget it. So let's go back to our topic here. So what is How are we different from Europe, and how should we, what can we do here?
Well, I think we need to stand up and say that white people have an identity and a heritage that's worth preserving. I mean, we have the same basic heritage as Europeans have. I mean, we have the same, we did have the same value system, the same concepts about what society was and what the family was and how people should treat each other and interact with one another. It's the same basic culture. There's not really any significant differences. So I think we have that idea of who we are as a people, and that needs to be asserted. I think the only way to do this is through politics right now. Because I've said before, and people are like, oh, you know, they want to whine, you know, there can't be any political solution. And it's like, well, they told Hitler the same thing, but whether or not it would work as smoothly as the appointment of Hitler, I doubt. But when you form a political party, then you have a top-down organizational structure like the Golden Dawn has. I don't know what's going to happen there, but when they say that they're threatening, you know, the Jews come out and try and threaten to ban them, they get up and say, we're going to open up the gates of hell if you try and ban us, because they have an organizational, like an SA-type street army that's capable of saying of having clout and weight and saying, you know, do you really want to release all these angry young men against the government? And that puts the government in a position where they have to make the first move and attack you, which always gives you the moral high ground in the eyes of the people.
Yes, but again, Greece is not the United States, and
well,
they're a very small country and are more cohesive still.
Yeah.
I don't think you can say that here. And I, you know, how do we don't have, how do we organize here in the U.S.?
That's,
I think it needs to be done in smaller areas.
Well, I think, it would be good to have all of us that are talking about this stuff, you know, the kind of this group of young men, it would be very good if we were all in the same geographical location, and I'm trying to figure out how to make that happen, try and figure out a centralized place for us to be. I don't know, you know, I'm still thinking it through, but yeah, I think this idea will be very popular, especially as you see this Republican Party collapsing, and as things get more and more extreme, we're going to have more and more economic problems. Eventually, they're going to have to go into austerity here.
Okay, you need to move again.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I don't... What part did you hear last?
Well, just a few words we didn't hear.
Okay. I think the idea will be very popular, and it's just about getting it out there. I mean, I think what Rockwell did worked very well. and something like that might be needed. But getting the idea into the consciousness of the masses and figuring out a way to shape a message that's simple enough and appealing enough, and then figuring out how to get that message heard by millions of people. So I mean, it's a tall order, but I mean, it just has to go step by step by step. And I'm that's what I'm doing right now. This is the only thing I've got that I care about doing. So this is just trying to figure out how to get it done for, 5-year plan, 10-year plan, and so on.
Well, I don't know if we have that much time, but of course, I mean, you can only do what you can do. Do you foresee, you think that there's enough of these younger men who are aware of all this, who will come together? I don't see them. When it comes down to actually doing something, I don't see them coming through. But maybe you're experiencing something different.
Well, I think it'll happen as things get worse and worse, and people continue to become more aware of the fact that they don't have any future. I mean, none of us have any future. I'm 28 years old, and I mean, to imagine what the United States is going to look like when I'm 38, I mean, it's a
yeah.
It's, if even things go at the exact same rate they're going now, so yeah. I mean, as far as not having the time, that's certainly a fact. I mean, we need to get something together quick and figure out what we're doing. I'm going over and seeing what these Europeans are doing, and then I'm just gonna figure out what the next step is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Andre.
No, I think it can be done.
Well, it has
Whether
to be,
not,
doesn't it? I mean, we have
does.
To get to that
there's
where
not,
it has to be.
There's not any choice. Now, whether or not you could take back the whole United States, I probably not. But I think when they cut this welfare, because that's going to happen. There's not anything else that can happen. And so they're bringing more and more and more people in to live on this welfare, so that when they cut it, it's going to create a war type of situation in America, because none of these non-whites can feed themselves. I mean, you have the native black population,
the
American Negroes.
What about the non-whites rioting, killing whites, taking what they want, getting away with it, and then just being, I don't, of course, that's no answer in the long run. That's no answer for this country. I think this, the U.S. government, in some kind of strategic places needs to be, like, decapitated or something. Something needs to be gotten to in this.
Well, it's killing itself. I mean, the government is going to be the least of our worries. What I see is these hordes are the problem now. I don't think, I mean, Alex Jones wants to talk about NATO's going to bring the military here. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the military is already invading us. It's all these non-whites they're bringing in here. So I think what we need to do now is just get an organizational structure, which you would do through a political organization that would also have a militia type arm, and like the SA. And I don't see any other way to go about this. And then once you have that, you're going to be in a position to deal with the society as it begins to break down. Because I mean, all of these these Africans that are coming here, all of the Mexicans, they're all living on welfare. All of the American blacks, they're all living on welfare. And when that goes, I mean, these people are going to turn to cannibalism.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so it's about preparing for that. And the U.S. government is not going to be it's going to collapse.
You're right that it's young people who have to, who are the only ones who are going to see that their own future is gone and are going to act, because, you know, they have a lot of time left, and it's older people or people like me don't say, well, you know, I won't see maybe the worst of this, but even though I would like to do something about it if I knew what to do, but, I think, though that at the same time, they've done a real good job of dumbing down and also, Judaizing and so on, young people. So that as, I think it was this thing that just came out that this, on this, oh yeah, you sent it to me, and it was this website for homosexual website and so on. And they had this article about this two boys who were voted cutest couple in the school for the school yearbook or whatever. Instead of a boy and girl couple, they voted for these two guys. And they're standing there, you know, and one guy's got his hand on the other guy's hip, and very kind of intimately in this picture. And they said that, oh, all the kids there are just so supportive of all this, and all young people today are just, they've gotten over all these ideas, and they're just so supportive of homosexuality and all these kinds of issues, and the world is changing and so on. And I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Well, I think there's also going to be a pretty extreme backlash, because it's also unnatural, and it's also forced down our throats. That, I mean, I talk to young people, and I can say, you know, things against homosexuals, I can say racist statements, and I see a lot of young people that are sick of this, sick of all of it, just being shoved down your throat. Again, they've pushed it too far, and they've pushed it too fast to try and restructure the whole society. And nature, everything wants to go back to the natural order. That's what the force always is, to go back to the natural order. And what they're doing is pushing against this basic order of nature, and it's just it's a really difficult thing to do and make it stick.
I think that's a real good point. That's really true, and that's probably one of the best things to hang on to. And, you know, what I was just saying, they put this stuff out, too. You know, this is like propaganda that they put out to get people to think that everybody goes along with this, and all the young people go along with it, and everybody's happy with it. And so that's to make you think, well, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, if everybody else is doing it, then I should be doing it, too. That's what they count on, is making it feel like the dominant position is the position of the Jews, even if it's not really. It becomes the dominant position because they've made you believe that, and that's part of the natural human behavior, is to want to be the same as other people, to want to hold the same views as other people, and to want to have the same value system. So they use that, they declare that this is the dominant value system, and then it becomes that because they've declared it. But I don't know. I mean, the homosexual stuff is so sick, and they're going to start pushing even sicker things. They're going to push pedophilia and bestiality, because with this whole idea that the purpose of being a human being is to feel good all the time, happiness equals pleasure. There's no bottom to it. As long as you're not hurting someone, it's okay. And it's just going to keep getting weirder and weirder. But I mean, we've reached the point now where I think people are sick of it. The people I talk to are sick of it. I talk to some people on the phone or on the internet who say that people where they are don't seem to be sick of it. But everybody I talk to is sick of it. A couple months ago, I was at the Chicago airport, and, you know, everybody there that I talked to that was white was talking about how sick they are of all these immigrants. And just coming right out and saying it, you know, it's,
Well, you know, I think about somebody like Hunter Wallace and his original dissent blog. It might have a new name now, but you know, he's pretty popular, and he has this loyalty to the Southern Confederacy, and he doesn't feel good about all American white people. He dislikes the North. And, you know, then there's other regions of the country, I suppose, that feel. Texans are very pro-Texas, you know, real Texans, and things like that. And I just wonder if certain regional things should be encouraged as being more possibly more successful than taking on the whole entire problem in the United States and
yeah,
how that would be done.
I think that some combination of that needs to be done, because, like I said, I don't think there's any way to, at this point, get back the entire nation from these non-whites. I mean, especially when you have, these places down in Texas and California that are, you know, a vast majority non-white. It just seems kind of crazy to expect that you're going to get all that territory back when we don't have an army. But I think that moving to certain locations, I think the further north you are is probably better, is what I've been thinking, because I think we're going to be in a war type of scenario relatively soon. I mean, this is what I see because of all these immigrants and the blacks that are living off the state, and that they can't just keep feeding all these people forever. It's because there's not going to be any more money. The whole system is going down because of these immigrants, and because of the wars and the banking system and everything else at the same time. But it's going to reach a point where it's no longer sustainable. The whole thing that we have going on in America is not going to be stable at all anymore, and it's gonna turn into where certain cities are just complete war zones, or entire parts of cities get cordoned off where, you know, the police can't go, and it just turns into like a Judge Dredd type situation.
Yeah, but, you know, how do you expect people to move somewhere where they don't have a job?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's...
That's when you get those hanger-ons who think, well, I'll go and join this group, and then they, you know, they think that they're going to be part of something that's going to take care of them, because they don't, then they, you know, they don't have to take care of themselves, sort of.
Well, if you got some land in certain areas, and you had people coming up and working on farms, and you started local businesses and created communities, I think that's all possible if, you know, effort was put into it. And I think that's probably the best way to start this, because you can get elected to local offices that have a certain degree of power, and as the federal government begins to be in further disarray, I mean, when you look at the government just seems so completely out of control, and you have these, you know, the Alex Jones types who are focusing on that they supposedly have so much control, but it seems like just a mad scramble to me that they are. It's such disarray, and with all these different wars and just bombing countries at random, and it just all seems kind of crazy. Like nobody even has control of anything is what I'm seeing. So I think that whole portrayal of this world system that they have so much so much control over everything, and they're planning everything out, and I think it's gotten so complicated that there's no way to predict what's going to happen.
Well, that's for sure. That's the trouble with the world today. That's one of the worst things about this world today, living in it, is that things don't make sense, and you can't, just like money, like the stock market and anything to do with your money, whatever, you can't figure out how to be safe. You can't be safe. There's, you don't know what's going to happen. And these people are in control. They do whatever they want. And it's the same with just, being safe in your nation and being able to tell that, tomorrow and next year will be like now, because they'll keep changing things. This person just keeps hanging up and recalling, this undisclosed number person. It seems like Russ, because that's the kind of thing that Russ does, so I'm glad I'm not answering it. But if somebody else with a real phone number would like to call in, I think my answering it should work. I don't know why it didn't work with him, but I'm glad it didn't. You can do that, 830-443-4911. Andre, what about, let's talk about William Pierce and what he did. Not talk about William Pierce so much, but his organization and how he went about it. And he started out right in the beginning, working for George Lincoln Rockwell and being willing to put out George Lincoln Rockwell's newspaper or newsletter, or whatever it was. And then that was at the time that Rockwell was assassinated. And then Pierce went on and formed his own thing and was very successful. But, of course, it still has an effect on us today. I mean, the legacy of it all still carries, and people are still moved and inspired by it. So that's good. But it never, well, what do you think about what he accomplished and if it was actually working, was going to work?
I think it would have worked if that same structure would have been in place, right now. Because right now is when it's all happening. Back when Pierce, when he died, 2002, it was still, people were still materially comfortable, and they hadn't pushed up this immigration, and things hadn't got as weird with all this sex stuff and everything else. I mean, people were not to the point where they were ready for that type of a movement, that type of an ideology. And now he's dead. And we don't have that type of a structure. It just doesn't exist. There's nobody doing what he was doing. It's possible Pierce was not, he was very, very intelligent, but he didn't have the charisma of George Lincoln Rockwell. So, I think if Rockwell would have lived, there things could have happened a lot differently, because Rockwell had that power in him that I don't think Pierce really had to that same degree.
No, and then there have been others, but nothing ever takes hold for any has taken hold big. Well, people say, as you're saying, that things weren't bad enough. People weren't suffering enough. It takes, like during, prior to World War II, there was a huge movement to try to keep us out of the war. And so, when big things are happening, then things come up and people respond. And there was a large amount of people joined organizations at that time. Anti-war, and they talked about Jews too. A lot in those groups. What happened to that? Well, the defeat of Germany is what killed all that.
Well, the war itself.
the propaganda yeah. was all in the hands of the globalists.
Yeah, I mean, the war itself basically killed it because a lot of that was also, you know, a reaction to the Depression. And at that time, I mean, you had... Ford had been pushing really hard, and you had, what was his name, Father Coughlin. Mm-hmm. You know, the awareness of the Jews was there, and there wasn't this... This Christian Zionism didn't really develop until after the war, when it kind of came along with the Holocaust doctrine that kind of was the secular version of the chosen ones type thinking. So you had this just complete that the Jews could just do whatever they wanted without being questioned for so long, and they really, really took advantage of that and just completely took over the media. I mean, they had control of a lot of the media before, but and then the technological explosion, they've been the ones that have harnessed that, because we've been under this capitalist system that they function so well in, because they're a collectivist group in this quote individualistic society, so they're capable of exploiting everyone in this capitalist framework. And I mean, the rate of change technologically has been very confusing. I mean, the way that it's changed people's lives. My grandmother lived until she was 12 without electricity. I mean, this has happened very, very quickly. This development of technology, and that itself throws people off. I mean, when things are completely different every decade, this is very difficult to deal with on the, you know, like on the sociological level. So, I mean, there have been a lot of factors that have gone into this, but what has happened is that the Jews have been able to push their will in every single, quarter of society, and ultimately they've never reached this level before, and they're so much a parasite that they fight against the society, but they've never really completely taken over a society before, and what they don't seem to understand how to handle it. They seem to just be collapsing it. I mean, they were running America. Why are they bringing all these immigrants here? Why don't they just kind of allow white people to exist and whatever, and just run the society and reap the benefits of it. It's a biological thing with these people where they just destroy, and I don't think they have a plan exactly for what they're going to do here.
Yeah, well, they, I had a thought while you were talking and now I kind of lost it, but yeah, they,
I don't think they have
parties,
a plan.
You know, these parties, that they, like what Tan was writing about, you know, they come up with this anti-immigrant stuff and they're involved in it. Now they might just be, want to be in everything, but I think in some cases, they would like to stop some of this immigration flow that they started. I know what I was just going to say was that, you know, that's part of their general thinking, to have multicultural societies, because they're safer. They feel safer in those societies. But now that as you say, you know, it's gotten out of hand even for them, then they would want to, slow down the immigration without it having anything, you know, any repercussions for themselves. So that could be where some of them are coming from when they become anti-immigrant Jews, you know, openly anti-immigrant, but you don't want to mention the Jews ever.
Or it could be controlled opposition, but there are some Jews. There's a top Jew. Oh, I can't remember what his name is, but he seems to be genuinely anti-immigrant because he's worried about these Muslims that they're going to take over Europe and America, and that they're going to hunt down the Jews, which would seem to be a pretty logical position for the Jews to have, but yet they just keep wanting to bring more and more. On the whole, I mean, there are Jews that are against it, but on the whole, they just keep pushing for more and more Muslims in Europe, and it's just kind of like, well, what are you even thinking? Because what is going to happen to these Jews when they establish the, you know, caliphate in Europe?
Well, the Muslims will just kill them. I do think that they think that once they can make the white people powerless, truly powerless, then they can handle all the rest, you know. They can handle these other, just like we think so. We think if we can get rid of the Jews, we can handle the rest of them. So it's a big battle between the white race and the Jews. That's what it is.
Yeah, it really is. These other people are just kind of there. I mean, they can be used more by the Jews than we have any use for them. But the Jews are the enemy. It wouldn't be hard to sort this all out. I mean, you could if you had control of we have these massive militaries and white countries. If we had control of those, we can just round these people up relatively peacefully. I mean, there'd definitely be some shots fired, I'm sure, but you could round these people up, send them back to their countries and close the borders, and then figure out a humanitarian way to deal with, you know, the situations of poverty that these people have. I mean, I don't have any problem sending some aid to these people and figuring out how to help them live a life that's not so horrible as the level of poverty that they're living in most non-white countries now. I mean, I don't have anything against these people. Just like with any, you know, any animals. Not that they're animals, but, you know, I don't want any living thing to suffer. I have no desire for that.
No, we don't have a desire, but you know, if people can't, just like in the natural world, we have to leave it alone, you know. In the wild world, we can't go in and interfere, you know, among groups of animals that live in the wild. They can't domesticate everything. And what happens is some pretty terrible things happen, and there's plenty of suffering, but you know, we don't have to know about it, and, that's the way it is. That's nature. I really do set nature up as a very high deity almost or something, but not. I do think that nature is something that is that we tamper with way too much. And now the thing with these, let's say Africans, just like when after slavery ended and there was all this talk about sending, you know, letting these people go back to Africa and giving them help. And there was this country, Liberia, that was formed and so on, that they could go to. And you would do that up to a certain time period. You know, you'd give them a good start. And then if they screwed it up, which they probably would do, and they couldn't keep it going, then you wouldn't keep sending help and sending help and sending help. You'd just let them, you know, do their thing. And if they revert to savagery or whatever and lose their civilization, well, that's what they've done, and that's all they can do. That's what they're going to do.
Well, that's what they're doing in Detroit. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to expect these people that didn't develop this civilization to be able to somehow just integrate into it flawlessly. And, I mean, the theory has been tried. I mean, it doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, look at, if you look
they
at
kept
Detroit,
saying, you know,
these people have no excuse.
Yeah, give these people a chance. Oh, let them elect their own politicians when there are a lot of them in an area, you know, so then you suddenly, I remember when the first black mayor, I guess, came about. I can't remember what city it was in. But it might have been Detroit. But then, you know, the first black this, and then we have the first black president. Well, give them a chance. See what they can do. Well, they never can do. You know, they don't do. They just destroy everything. But they're still saying that. They still say that. Well, they have to be given a chance. See, they might do all right, you know.
Well, I mean, it would be like white people trying to integrate into Native American society. It just wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not even about saying that our civilization is better than theirs. I don't know, I mean, how you would objectively
say that.
I mean, you don't have to say that. I mean, these people had very interesting, I mean, you know that I've lived in these tribal areas, and I believe very much that these people are fascinating, and they have a special way of living, and they have all these great qualities and things, just like, you know, tigers or orangutans or something. You know, it's they're living things that deserve to have their own way and have their own place and all of this. I don't think anybody is saying that we should take that away from these people, except the Jews who have gone in there and destroyed these people's countries with these World Bank loans that they can't ever pay back, and then they have to go into this poverty and use up all their resources trying to pay back these loans that they got for things that they didn't need in the first place.
Right. Right. It's just this interference and people trying to run everything in to their own, for their own benefit. Well, in the last few minutes, you know, we brought up the Jews in the World War II and how they do power, you know, concentrated at that time and, you know, using this Holocaust of theirs, is playing a big role in it. And I know you're very interested in the Holocaust, and I know that you read the article that came out today about the Rosenberg, diary that that has somehow been found. And, you know, we haven't heard all the details of this, but, it really got me when I read that, apart from the fact that they think they can just take this guy's diary and do whatever they want with it. But I don't know that that's the biggest issue. The biggest issue is that it admits in there that the government and the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum were working together to find they had got some information, I guess, about it, and to find where this diary was, and they discovered it at this through this associate of Kempner, who was the one who stole it, this prosecutor in Nuremberg. He did all he forged the 1C protocol documents, and then he's doing whatever he wants with these documents. You know, there's a big investigation that can go on there. But this United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, I realize that it was authorized by Congress. And it gets federal money every year for it to be run. So it's, you know, and it had the presidential blessing. So it's really incredible that we have this. Our government backs the Holocaust like it is. But this just points out that our government, the U.S. government, does have a vested interest in backing the Holocaust and supports this Holocaust Museum in Washington and even has our agent from Homeland Security. Here it was. The Holocaust Museum and an agent from Homeland Security Investigation tried to locate the missing diary pages and tracked them to Richardson, who was living near Buffalo. And now I guess they got him from Richardson, probably, you know, threatened him. And now what are they going to do with them? But
sent a SWAT team to his house.
Hand it over, you're toast. So now, now this Holocaust Museum is talking about it, probably wants to have it in their collection because they were talking about all of the documents they've been accumulating and how many thousands they've got, you know, relating to Holocaust. And they think that these diary pages have some relationship to it A cursory content analysis indicates that the material sheds new light on a number of important issues relating to the Third Reich. They said something a little bit more. It includes details about German occupation of the Soviet Union, including plans for mass killings of Jews and other Eastern Europeans. You know, I bet.
Yeah.
You know, well, we don't get to hear that. We don't get to see them. And if we do, we'll probably only see portions that they want to show and things like that.
And they won't release the handwritten journals themselves for historians to look at. That's what they do. I mean, that's like with Goebbels' diaries, that nobody can get the handwritten copies of it. right. of certain passages that they claim were in there. There was a whole thing where somebody was trying to get them from the German government, and they would just send them typed up copies, transcripts. That article was written by a Jew. That also said that something with the border security was going to be at the meeting. They're having a meeting to announce the discovery and what it means for the Holocaust. I mean, World War II was a very big event. Even if you believe this Holocaust was real, why would the first thing of Rosenberg's diaries be, oh, the Holocaust?
Well, they're not. They're trying to say they might have some bearing on it, but they're not about that.
They could have faked this.
They insinuate this stuff. Oh, they could be doing a lot of things. You're right. But what's so terrible is that the Homeland Security is working with the Holocaust Museum. Now, how does that work out? You know?
Well, apparently they're a government agency now. I mean, they might as well be. Every other government agency is run by Jews.
Well, that's
doesn't really
right.
make any
you
difference.
Know, they have this power over the government. You know, they're supposed to be
over everything. So, and they all work together. So, I mean, what if the government's working with the Jew banks or the Jew corporations or the Holocaust Museum? It's all just Jews. It doesn't matter where they are.
Right. It seems like the Holocaust Museum has a lot of power. And if they want to get in on something, the government lets them. You know, they get in on it. So it's just. Boy, I got a real thing about that Holocaust Museum, but but this is an area that I think if we want to bring down, if we want to enlighten people about the Jews and like you were talking about earlier, this is an area to work on because this Holocaust that people believe in has a lot of power over their thinking and causes them to not want to. Say anything bad about the Jews and also the whole idea of deporting people, forcing people to leave your country goes back to this Holocaust thing. You know, you can't ever do that. Well, Andre, you know, we've only got less than a minute now, 30 seconds. So I want to thank you very much for coming on with me tonight and talking about these issues. They're pretty difficult to talk about, but you're always willing. So thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. It was fun.
Well, I hope so. And ladies and gentlemen, come back again next week and do go and visit Andrew's website, totalfascism.com. I don't suppose there's anybody listening that's not quite familiar with it already. But we'll see you again. Good night for now.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.